We are covering Slam Dance 2024. Today we have filmmaker Radha Mehta on the show talking about her film Dosh.
Hey everybody, this is Kyler Bingham with Salt Lake Dirt. We are continuing our coverage of Slam Dance 2024 and been seeing some very incredible films. Like always, Slam Dance is one of my favorite festivals and just the best quality films and up there. So we're here today. We have an incredible filmmaker. The film is called Dosh, and this is one it really spoke to me. So who do we have with us today? Tell us who you are, and tell us a little bit about the film.
Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you all. I mean, thank you so much for having me. I'm so grateful. My name is Radha Mehta, and I'm a director and writer of this story for Dosh, and it's a short narrative film. And it is actually a thesis film from my MFA program from American Film Institute.
Yeah, the films that I've seen that have come out of there, just incredible. I mean, it sounds like you have access to some really incredible resources when you make that. So when you have something that is written so well, like in this case, Dosh, I mean, it just ended up so beautiful and like touching. I want to ask you about the writing process of it, and then we'll kind of get into like maybe some of the visuals and just doing working with AFI. But the writing of it, the screenplay, where did this idea come from? How did you end up writing it?
Sure. Yeah. So this idea and the actual story is based on many true events within my own life. So I am a mother of two children, a 7-year-old and a 4-year-old. And I'm also hard of hearing, and I have been hard of hearing since I was 6 months old. And then I've also experienced, and I'm trying to be careful not to give too much away from on the film, but I've experienced myself being drowned when I was a little kid. It was a very traumatic event for my family. And I had also been truly, truly, deeply, madly in love with a person who had been diagnosed late onset bipolar. And so, you know, my diaspora, the community I belong to, I'm South Asian, I'm Indian. Although I've been born and raised here in the US, my family comes from Mumbai. And so one of the true reasons for me writing this story and putting together true events, but in a fictional form, is because I want to, in some small way, dismantle this taboo that we experience as South Asians around mental health and also around physical disability. It's so taboo within our culture that we don't talk about it openly, and therefore we suffer and we deal with certain challenges internally in silence. And I want to be more open about this, and I want to be more loving and nurturing towards just being able to go through whatever challenges we may have together and just make it seem as if it's just a thing that we can talk about and not feel so shameful about.
Yeah, like that's great. I mean, when especially specifically talking about bipolar, and then, you know, I don't want to spoil anything, but I think like there's a part in the film where the main character is talking to the mother-in-law, and she is kind of expressing concern for her husband, and like please talk to him, he'll listen to you, and she's just kind of acting like everything's normal, and then she also kind of admonishes the daughter-in-law, like keep it under your own roof for your family. So I just thought, you know, especially in certain communities, how isolating and awful that must be. It's awful no matter what, when someone's suffering from something, mental health issues and disorders, but when it is kind of brushed aside, it's just got to be so overwhelming and isolating and making the person feel that they truly are going crazy. And then not to mention all the family members that are dealing with it, and they feel so alone. So I feel like it's just, it's a beautiful piece of just kind of shining the light on something that, you know, really needs to be talked about. Pulling so much from your own personal life, when you were going through the process of writing it, Because I'd imagine you were on a kind of a timeline since it was your thesis. From an emotional standpoint, how did that feel? Were you able to kind of detach yourself and just write, or did it bring up stuff that was challenging, you know, and making ultimately like a great piece of art, but also it could potentially be very hard going, reliving those things. So I'm just curious about your process of actually writing it. What were you feeling as you were going through it?
Yeah. Thanks for asking. So I have an amazing co-writer who is like a dear friend and like a soul sister of mine. She was part of the screenwriting program. Her name is Noura Aladi, and she's originally from Saudi Arabia. And we had connected at the beginning of our first year for one of our first cycle films. And the way AFI works is the first year you do like back-to-back films that would never be seen in the world, but it's meant to be like experimental ways of high production value, like films where you can like learn how to be whatever discipline that you're in. So my discipline was directing and hers was writing. And so, you know, I talked to her about an idea that I wanted to explore for thesis. And so I pitched her like a whole outline of, one specific idea that I wanted to really dive into that dealt with these specific themes of bipolarism within my South Asian diaspora. And you know, the main character being hard of hearing and being that mother that tries to like save this family and save him, which ultimately ends up saving herself. And then she really was so instrumental to me. So even though I would like give her these emotional ideas based on my past experiences, she was so instrumental in terms of creating a whole structure around it. And then there'd be moments where it'd be just so hard that I can't, like, I just remember our writing sessions together where I would just like break down and cry. Mm-hmm. She would just like really encourage me to lean into being fully vulnerable, like lean into that vulnerability. And she gave me confidence. Like she gave me confidence that it's this truth that needs to be spoken in order to help make some kind of positive change. And if we could just change one person's view on this, on these themes, then we've done our job. And that really resonated with me, which then gave me the strength to continue. And, you know, that's from the writing alone, but part of the writing also entails like the world that we want to create. So then that's my collaboration with the production designer, as well as like the look and the feel we want to create on the frames. And that's my collaboration with my DP. And I was just so grateful that we were all so in sync and so invested in this specific story, even though it comes from my truth. Mm-hmm. We were so invested in telling the best version of it. And I truly believe, which I learned from AFI, I truly believe that collaboration makes things even more powerful because of my ability to, first of all, be vulnerable, but then they like helped elevate it to a level that was beyond what I could think of my own story. Cause it is easy to get stuck in your own trauma. And so it's like, when you ask me like, would you ever do this again? I'd be like 50-50, you know, cause it's hard to go through this, but then I know that because I speak my truth, I think that's where the authenticity can be shown, I believe, on screen in the way I direct my performance as well, you know? So it's hard to write your own stories.
that makes so much sense. I mean, and I'm reading a book right now called The Path to Paradise, and it's about Francis Ford Coppola and when he was starting his company Zoetrope, and then kind of putting together the film Apocalypse Now. So late 60s, early to mid 70s is when the book takes place. But the big focus of him at the time was collaboration and just really focusing on bringing together filmmakers, whether established or not, and just the importance of playing to people's strengths. So it sounds like what you're doing with AFI, just like it really fosters that community of, you know, bringing in and giving you access to some incredible things. So I'd love to talk more about that, about AFI itself. I know a little bit about it, but not much. I'd love to hear kind of maybe how you first got interested in film and what led you to the AFI.
For sure. Yeah. So I would say Dosh is like my narrative directorial debut. But prior to Dosh, I had been making short documentaries that largely first started with just like filming stories of my own family. Mm-hmm. Cause I found them to have pretty interesting stories. Like my mom defied like arranged marriage And she would secretly date my dad for 3 years. And then finally they fell into a love marriage. And I just noticed when I made that first film 10 years ago, I submitted to a festival and then it started winning awards. And I was like, oh, I'm onto something, even though I had no resources at the time. Mm-hmm. And so then I would just start building that up a little bit. And I just loved, like, I've always had side hustles of something creative because I need to have these creative outlets to keep me sane, aside from having a day job that earns me, you know, money for me and my family. So my creative pursuits were definitely filmmaking, but then also like painting and music. And what I love about the medium of filmmaking is that it's the most comprehensive. It actually includes, like, through production design, art, and through music and score, like my love for working with actual musicians and composers. And then, of course, storytelling being the most important thing throughout filmmaking. And so when I was looking, it was during the pandemic that I was considering, like, okay, you know, I think I really want to make this a full-time career, and have this be the thing that, like, sustains me. And so I was looking at documentary film programs, like Stanford, Duke, Northwestern. And then I met someone that had graduated from AFI, a cinematographer, and he spoke very highly of AFI, and he was saying that, you know, you should consider it. And I said, well, that's narrative filmmaking. I'm not sure if I'd be good at that, you know? And he just, like, really encouraged me. So then I looked into the app, and then fast forward, by the time the app was due, I was like saying, I'm not going to apply. And then my husband was the one that said, you know, just give it a try. You're already applying to these other documentary programs. Why don't you just, like, you know, just rejig your application so that you could apply. And so I did, like, literally on the 11th hour, and they called me for an interview, and the interview sold me. And I'm so grateful that there must've been, like, a force that was, like, telling me to apply to this. And I'm glad I did, because that interview confirmed what I wanted to do in life, which is, like, with narrative storytelling, you can actually apply that to true, like, documentary nonfiction work. But now you have this whole access to a medium that you can incorporate true stories, but then be able to create a dramatic, like, fiction form that can still speak that truth, but in a way that can be crafted with greatest impact, you know? And so, so that was kind of like my love for film. It really just started from my own family stories. And then now I'm still doing family stories, but hopefully I would get the opportunity to do more, but with other people's stories, but be able to infuse my own, like, truth and authenticity to it.
Oh, that's incredible. I love that, you know, something that wasn't really necessarily on your radar, but then being open to what other people maybe are saying or encouraging you. Maybe they see something in you that you didn't see initially yourself. And so that's so cool that door opened up. And I, you know, as far as, like, one thing, I think I've seen a few thesis films, and what just really struck me was just, like, how beautiful everything was, like, just visually. So, you know, taking story aside, everything writing, just, like, the visual component was just so beautiful. You know, walk me through some of the planning stages of it, maybe what you did yourself or who you collaborated with, to kind of, you know, produce this, you know, just a visually striking film, like the water scenes, and, you know, just there's so much in it that I found, you know, visually captivating. So talk to me a bit about that.
Yeah. I'm glad that you resonated with the water. So we were the actual first film for my class, like the first team to actually shoot. And so we had no previous, like, role model, because usually, like, the teams that get to shoot a little bit later, they can learn from the earlier teams, like, okay, what did you do right? What did you do wrong? Like, what are some lessons learned? So we kind of had to set our own rules for our year. And when I said that I wanted to include water, like, the actual production side of AFI was, like, really nervous about that, because they were just like, have you ever shot in water before? And I said, no, but this is the purpose of, like, being able to do a thesis film where you can try to keep elevating your craft. And my DP was so excited about it, because this was a great challenge for her as well. But, you know, as part of the prep process, like, the whole first year, you're just, like, on these back-to-back, like, film sets and just learning so much on, like, on-set training, which is so incredible. And I find that really good about AFI compared to some other film schools, is that it's less theory and it's more practical. So you learn something just by doing, and I'm the kind of person that learns by doing. But in terms of prep for this, it's quite an extensive process. And to some degree, it could be a little bit too extensive, to the point where a director or the key writer of the story can lose its voice in the process. So it's very, one of the things that we do learn is how to protect our own voice as a filmmaker. And so despite all the noise that, you know, the criticism or the critical feedback that we receive from all these various mentors, we have to stay true to what it is that we originally intended to make. And that's where my principal team and I were so aligned, because they knew that from the get-go. But then when you go through these mentor meetings one after another, it can get a little bit draining at times. And so it kind of starts out with a 20-week out. You know, we start with these meetings with the AFI production, like 20 weeks out. And every week we have a certain meeting. So there's no doubt that there's discipline and structure there. And every single meeting is a specific milestone that we have to hit. Like, for instance, you know, is the location secured by this point? Is the cast and crew, you know, secured at this point, whatnot? And that's gets closer to the actual shoot dates. But in terms of the actual preparation on our end, I did, you know, I felt like I did quite a few extra steps just because this was my first time making like a narrative film that was going to be out in the world. So I kind of like gave it my all, and I did like the extra, you know, whatever I could do, like extra rehearsals and even like at location, see if I could pay more money to be at the location for rehearsal, things like that, just so that my cast and crew would feel comfortable with the actual production before we actually shot it. And I highly recommend that, because I felt like it's what helped me, like on the days of the actual filming, for it to go smoothly, despite the challenges we had. And I'm the kind of person that feels like the film gets made in prep, and then once you actually shoot it, the magic happens in post. And I'm just a huge fan of that, because I want to go in knowing that if we're going to have to pivot, then I've already thought of every single different option that we could be able to pivot easily without causing a lot of strain. And I feel like our team did pretty well with that, you know? So, but I love, like, so we watch a lot of films, like, especially me and my DP, we reference a lot of like shots from different films that we resonate with. We had like this whole very extensive lookbook. And then one of the things that I wanted to share with you about, like, you know, dealing with past trauma and just like leaning into that vulnerability. One of the things that we were required to do as a director is that we were supposed to, we were required to actually rehearse and shoot a specific scene from the story in front of all our fellow directors. And that can get very nerve-wracking, because you respect these other directors' opinions and like you don't want to fail in front of them. But because I was the first, I was like, okay, so I chose a very emotional scene from my film to try. And when I did it, I broke down. I cried. So like it was so, because my cast was doing, in my opinion, such a good job, that it hit certain nerves within me that took me to my past. And my whole directing class saw me cry and break down. And like my teacher was just like, this is what I'm talking about. This is how you lean in. And I was just like, I was a mess, Kyler. I was just like such a mess. And I was so embarrassed. And luckily my directors after then, because it was like an emotional 3-hour workshop. Mm-hmm. Luckily my directors after then were just like, listen, we resonate. Like, don't ever feel ashamed. Like when you cry, when you feel something, you know, when you're directing something. And I was just like, I got to get better at this. You know, I got to pull my stuff together. So it was good practice, because I was very careful not to break down like during the actual show. Luckily, if I did break down, I think there was one moment where I was about to like feel something. You know, I was like, something was coming out of me, but my writer pulled me aside. It was like, she was like, talk to me. And I was like, okay. So then luckily the whole team didn't see it, you know?
Oh, I love that though. That's like, no, I mean, that's what makes great art ultimately. It's like, and it is, it's brave. It's brave and vulnerable and, you know, and all the above. But wow, that sounds, that's incredible. Tell us. Okay. So right before we started recording, the name of the film, Dosh. So yes. Tell us what that is. What does that mean?
Yeah. So Dosh is a Hindi word that means fault and flaw. So it has two meanings. And the reason I chose that word is part of the message of this film, that whoever is dealing with a mental challenge or a disability, in our diaspora, we were often told it's our fault for whatever that challenge is or whatever it is, that struggle that we're dealing with. And part of that fault is based on our beliefs in reincarnation and beliefs that that we must have, and the karmic law. So we must have done something wrong in a past life to deserve what we have now. And I just remember growing up, because of my hard of hearing disability, it's just difficulty in hearing. And it took my family a long time for me to get hearing aids. because they couldn't have, it was hard for them to afford it due to lack of insurance coverage. And so I just remember a lot of people within our community would say to my parents, like, I'm so sorry that your daughter has this, you know, this problem, and she must have done something wrong in her past life to deserve this, but we wish you well, type of thing. And of course that would be like a source of shame for my parents. And my mom, being an immigrant, like, she didn't know English completely that well. She had a hard time being able to stand up for me in settings of school, like to be able to, for me to learn how to advocate for myself. Like, hey, I need to sit in the front because I can't hear. And like, we're struggling to be able to afford hearing aids, and then, you know, things like that. So, and when I was dealing with my loved one of having, you know, late onset diagnosis, for the longest time, we didn't know what was going on. And we would go to psychiatry appointments after psychiatry. And, you know, there was a bit of a challenge there because they would just push a lot of pills to us, to him. And a lot of them can be suicidal, like make you have suicidal thoughts. And I just remember when I turned to someone within our own community, they were just like, we don't know like what this is. Like, it's kind of like a Western scam. But on the other hand, they would also say like the way to heal any kind of problems like this is through yoga, meditation, prayers, pranayama, like deep breathing. And I was like, that can't be the only way. And so that's all I've known and grown up to believe. And now I'm realizing that there, you know, when you're dealing with chemical imbalances, there's much more to it. And we're just not educated. And yeah. So it was quite a struggle for us to figure out what to do, to the point that it was all, it almost led to a tragedy. Mm-hmm. And so, that's part of my thing, is that I don't think it's never a fault of me or, you know, the person that I loved in terms of what we were dealing with, but it's a fault of our society for being ignorant to something that is so necessary for us to be open about, because it is rampant now. Mm-hmm. Like, just last week, two members within my South Asian community, sad to say, they committed suicide by jumping off a roof, and it's due to mental health challenges that we just don't talk about. And So that's kind of like the message. It's like, even though the word is fault or flaw, the whole idea is that it's not our fault. It's the society's fault. We need to rise above those circumstances with love, with nurturing love.
Absolutely. I mean, it just compounds the problem. It just adds to it when there is that element of, like, you know, maybe well-meaning, but like ignorance or shame is brought upon the person. It just makes the situation worse, and then awful things can happen because of it. So, I think this is a very important film. I'm really excited for people to see it at Slam Dance. Let's talk a bit about Slam Dance. Yeah. I want to know, 'cause Slam Dance is one of my favorite, if not my favorite film festival, out there. And the quality of films that get into it, and just the diversity and all the different voices that come together in one festival every year is beautiful. So, tell me about, like, entering Slam Dance, and then tell me about when you like got word that you got in, and what was your reaction?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Oh my God. Crazy story. So I was in bed sick for like a week, like whatever, you know, like cold that was just going around, and my son had it. He got over it quick. My daughter had it. Then my husband had it. And then I had it, but I had it hard. And so I had been in bed, and one of the nights when I was feeling a little bit better, I got this call from someone I know from my, is my disability community called Respectability, Juliet Romeo. And I got a call from her, and I was like, oh, this is interesting. So let me answer it. So when I answered it, it was her and then Asha, and they're both the creators of the Unstoppable program at Slam Dance.
Yeah.
So they called me and they're like, hey, Radha, you know, we just wanted to kind of check in with you, and we wanted to kind of let you know some bad news. And I was like, what? And she's like, well, unfortunately, you got into Slam Dance. And I was like,
some messed up.
And I tell them to this day, like, that was the worst emotional roller coaster to have at that moment. I was like, don't mess with my heart, you know. But when she told, when they were so excited, you know, as both, you know, founders of this program, but then also like they just resonated really well with the story, when they told me that, I was like, this is phenomenal, because I had been following Slam Dance for quite some time, and I love how, like, how cutting edge they are in terms of the films that they choose, and like how And I've attended a few like AGBO events that were in LA that were kind of like in partnership with Slamdance. And I could just tell that they care. Like they really care about their specific filmmakers and stuff. And I was just telling myself, I was like, I would love to be a part of that community. Mm-hmm. And Taylor, the executive director, she's amazing. And then Peter, also the founder, when I hear them speak, I just feel like they come from such a true, authentic place and independent filmmakers, you know, that believe in independent and that film spirit. So yeah, that's how I got the news, is when I was sick in bed, but then it was like such an emotional roller coaster. And then at that point I couldn't wait to tell my team, but a part of me was like, wait, can I tell my team just yet? Or do I have to keep it secret or what, you know? So
that's exciting. And then I think what's cool about this year, they did it last year too, but being part of the Unstoppable program, you get a screening in Salt Lake City at the University of Utah, which is, I wasn't able to attend those last year, but I heard really incredible things from filmmakers that were able to make it. So, you know, you get the Park City experience, which is incredible. And then the screening at the University of Utah, it brings in a lot of locals and a lot of people who, you know, I think it's just a beautiful thing that so many people from the community down here are able to experience that and see these films that are very important. So tell me what you're looking forward to most about the festival. We're about a month away, a little less than a month away now. Tell us about what are you anticipating most? Have you been up to Park City before? Tell me about what you're anticipating.
Yeah. You know, to mention about the Salt Lake City, I'm so excited because that's at University of Utah and it's a free event. So mm-hmm. then that makes it so accessible, like not only from a, like accessible from a disability standpoint, like anyone with wheelchairs or anyone, it's easy to get into, but also just the fact that no one has to pay to be able to attend that. So I'm just grateful because I would love for people beyond just the filmmaking community to see it. But yeah, like the thing that I'm most excited about is this is the first festival where basically a majority of my team are actually going to be able to attend. So my team will be there for that first main weekend. And we got this house together of like 12 of us. And it's just going to be a good bonding time after having made this film a little, you know, just a while ago. And I think that we're going to have fun just networking amongst other filmmakers and as well as, you know, like the programmers and whatnot. That I feel like it's going to be a good community for them and for me. And we're paired with a feature film called Good Bad Things, which I in the previous shorts, like documentaries that I made, I've never been paired with a feature. So it's going to be an interesting experience as opposed to being a shorts block. So it's, you know, it's just like a little bit of a different audience. Mm-hmm. And the fact that we have two screenings, like that's amazing. Like, you know, I didn't know that was a thing either. But yeah, I had been to Park City before because, so one thing I didn't mention, you know, when I said that I have like these different creative pursuits and why I chose filmmaking as my main thing, one of the things that I used to be a singer-songwriter. And so I was invited to attend Sundance like years ago in a past life, but I was a songwriter for a showcase there.
Oh, wow.
And so I got to go and experience. And that was at a time where I knew, like, first of all, nothing about film or knew whether or not I wanted to actually pursue that. But just like being exposed to that really inspired me that I was like, maybe there's something here, you know? And so to go back now as a filmmaker is pretty amazing. So yeah. Yeah. I mean, I feel like we've already been making good connections because of like, there's WhatsApp groups that we all like, we're a part of, like the narrative filmmaking for Slamdance, but also like the larger group. And we're already like, you know, following each other on Instagram and stuff like that. So I'm already developing good relationships with some people that I can't wait to finally meet in person. And I think it's just going to be a good time to just party and just like, just really appreciate each other's art, you know?
Yeah. You're going to love it. It's incredible. So yeah, let's tell people where they can see it. So Saturday, January 20th at 12:45 PM, that'll be the screening up at the RO up in Park City. And then Wednesday, the 24th at 4 p.m., and that'll be at the Student Union Theater at the University of Utah. So you get a couple chances. So if you're a local Salt Lake City listener, definitely check out the Student Union one. It's free. And then for anyone coming in, just be aware of Dosh. Incredible film. I thought it was beautiful. I loved it. It's going to stick with me. I know that for sure. Anything else you want to add as we wrap up here today?
Yeah. First of all, I think like filmmaking is not only a very, beautiful medium, but it's incredibly tough, especially if we're trying to tell our own stories, as I mentioned before. And, you know, it's easy for someone like me when we're having to apply for these different opportunities, whether it be film festival selections or just even grants, to be able to, in my case, make my own feature one day soon. It's very easy to get jaded because we get rejection after rejection after rejection. And I think that's just part that that's the nature of the business. But it just takes those one to two people that believe in you, that would be willing to actually carry you forward and having your voice heard. And I feel like I'm starting to find those few people that that believe in me. And so my note to any other filmmakers out here listening, or any creatives in general, is to not give up and to believe in yourself first and foremost, that your voice is worth hearing. And I think just believing in that and let that be your guiding light, as opposed to seeking outside validation, can really carry you forward in very beautiful ways, and ways that you would never, you know, and make an impact in ways that you would never imagine.
Oh, that's one. I love that. That's beautiful advice. And I'm so happy that your creative path took you to narrative film, because I see, you know, a huge body of work coming down the line from you. And I'm just excited to see what you come up with. This was a real pleasure being able to see this before the festival. And I'm excited to meet you up in Park City. I'll be up there. And this has been wonderful. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today.
Yeah. Thank you, Kyler. I appreciate this so much.